The light from the lighthouse, shine on me. Shine, let it shine. Let the light from the lighthouse shine on me.
This is a lighthouse version of Tell Joy Where to Go. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, October 25th. Every Friday at this time, we talk about something related to Wisconsin's history or culture or recreation, something special about Wisconsin. And I often ask you to tell me where to go for a great Wisconsin experience. And of course, we let everyone in on the fun. And today we are going to talk about Wisconsin lighthouses, their past, present, and future. And welcome your lighthouse stories and questions. Do you like to tour them, photograph them, preserve them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. They are Ken and Barb Wardius, lighthouse photographers and preservationists and co-authors of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good, and good morning, Barb.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having us on.
Well, thanks very much for being with us. I really wasn't that involved in lighthouses until I took a tour last summer in Door County, a lighthouse tour. I was just amazed. They're beautiful, and there's a lot of history there, and it's just fun. It's just fun to tour them. Why did you decide that you wanted to set out and capture Wisconsin's lighthouses?
Well, Door County is one of our favorite places, and that's where our love of lighthouses began, 35 years ago at Cana Island. I hope you got to visit there.
Yes.
And as we visited and toured the few that were open at that time, we simply wanted to know more, and we didn't think it would be that difficult in the future to write a book. Little did we know, but it just kept us going. It was just so interesting to us that as a team, we just kept going and looked for as much as we could in the way of knowledge and history.
Well, why are lighthouses so iconic here in Wisconsin?
Well, Joy, I think everybody seems to have an idea of what lighthouses mean to some people. Perhaps it's the history. A lot of times there's people romanticize about how lighthouse life was years ago. Actually, it was very, very hard work, day in and day out. Some of the things we conjure up in our mind about how glorious that era might have been is really not that accurate. Lighthouses mean different things to different people. We've met descendants of lighthouse keepers, and a lot of it is a family affair. Mariners certainly use the lighthouses, even today with all the sophisticated, tools and technology that we have. It's still that safe haven, if you will, when a recreational boater may be coming in from a storm. So it means a number of things to a number of folks.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of lighthouses in Wisconsin. What were they used for?
Okay, in the early days, they were used at the request of mariners to help them find safe harbor. Imagine you're out on, even just the Bay of Green Bay or Lake Michigan in a storm, and you are lost. You don't know where you are. There's tons of rocky shoals, outcroppings, all kinds of terrible things that could happen to your ship. Mariners were clamoring for them. And the first one was actually built on Rock Island. It's called the Pottawatomie Lighthouse, built in 1836. So you can just see how long ago that this began, that mariners that were carrying perhaps shipments of wood and other goods at that time needed these lights to keep them safe.
And how many? Go ahead.
Historically, Joy, throughout the entire world, not just in Wisconsin and the Great Lakes, most lighthouses initially were built in response to commerce. If you think back 150 years ago, we didn't have the railroads of today, the modern highways of today. Most goods were transported via water, so it was important for towns and cities as they were growing to have harbors and to have a safe place for mariners to see, and lighthouses really came out of the response of commerce throughout the entire world.
Yeah. So how did lighthouses guide the ships to safe harbor?
Well, Well, the beam certainly was the the primary piece of technology. Many lighthouses also had fog signal buildings, the booming. If you're the age that Barb and I are, we remember as kids in Milwaukee, we grew up in Milwaukee, there was a booming fog signal to also let mariners know where Milwaukee was on a very foggy day. You may not be able to see the light, but initially it was the lamp, the light that drew mariners to Safe Haven. Years ago, before brick lighthouses and metal lighthouses were built, historically in Egypt, one of the first lighthouses, the Pharaohs of Egypt, actually started out as a very large fire on a elevated piece of land. Later on, mirrors and the technology advanced, different lamps were used, candlelight became, the increased power became more and more. So it really evolved over 50 to 100 years. Today, obviously, the technology has changed and the need for lighthouses is not the same.
I was going to say, right, with technology, GPS technology, other tools to help sailors know where they're going and if they're approaching rocky areas, are lighthouses still needed today?
They're not needed so much as for the big ships, but we've talked to people that do own boats and go out just as a recreational type of sport, and they do appreciate knowing where they are. As Ken mentioned, especially if it's foggy, there's a fog signal, and even on a non-foggy night, you can tell by the flash or non-flash, the signature of the light, in case you are lost and your GPS does go out. We have heard tales that this does happen to people, so they are still very appreciative of the lighthouses, but they are all automated at this time.
So how many are still in service in Wisconsin?
There's 48 original lighthouses, Joy. About three-quarters of those are still operational.
And what does it mean by being automated?
Historically, lighthouses were manned by people, by men and by women. Over the last 50 years or so, like many things in technology, the human presence gave way to machines that would automatically turn the light on at dusk, turn the light off at dawn. A lot of the fuels were modernized. Electricity obviously came into play. So there is no human presence continuously at any lighthouse in the United States, except for one on the East Coast, Boston Harbor, which was the site of the first lighthouse in the American colonies. And that's more of the symbolic presence of a human being. But all of them today have no human keepers stationed there day in and day out like they would have years ago. Many times the Coast Guard will still tend the automated features, and they'll look at the maintenance of them once or twice a year, but that's basically it. A lot of the grounds don't look like they did when people were tending to them day in, day out. So automation, as many things have forged on with technology, the human presence really has changed a lot over the years.
Where are the lighthouses that are still operational in Wisconsin?
Well, there's actually quite a few, as you noticed, in Door County, that you can visit Cana Island, you can visit Eagle Bluff, and you can actually tour those. The ones on Pilot and Plum are still operational, but you can't visit them at this time. There are 10 lighthouses on Lake Superior, some of them being the Apostle Islands. You may have heard of Raspberry Island or Sand Island. Those are all lighthouses you can visit by boat. Sometimes they will take cruises where you can land on the island and actually tour the lighthouses. There are actually 4 on Lake Winnebago, if you can believe it. None of those are open to the public other than Asylum Bay and Fond du Lac. Those are kind of a self-guided tour where you just go and take a look around by yourself. And there are some in other parts of Wisconsin. North Point in Milwaukee in Lake Park is open to the public on weekends. Old Fort Washington is open. They're all over. So we're going to put a plug in for the book right now. If you buy the book or get the book online, it'll tell you which lighthouses are open and give you their general time frames as to that information as well.
Well, we are talking about the book as well during this hour, Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. And we are welcoming your questions, your reflections, your memories about lighthouses. Do you enjoy touring lighthouses? What do you admire about them? Do you have a favorite Wisconsin lighthouse and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about lighthouses this hour, Wisconsin lighthouses. We are talking with Ken and Barb Wardius. They are lighthouse photographers and preservationists and co-authors of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. And we are hearing about the lighthouses of Wisconsin, and we're welcoming your questions and your views about this. Have you ever toured a lighthouse? Have you ever worked in a lighthouse? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. A caller who couldn't stay with us asked, what company built the lighthouses? And did the lighthouses have stronger mortar because they were so close to the water?
That's a couple of interesting questions there, Joy. Initially, the lighthouse, there wasn't a single manufacturer or construction company, if you will, of the early lighthouses. It was regulated by the federal government. That changed over the years, too, as the government's role in various parts of our lives came to be. Initially, on the East Coast, as the colonies were formed, some of the very basic day-to-day decisions about where to put some of the early lights, some of the appropriations, the money angle on getting the initial Congress to fund lights was done by the Congress. And actually the president was involved very intimately in the decision of where to put lights and some of the tariffs that were charged to ships coming in to build the lights. As the government grew and the country expanded, there were various agencies of the government that took over the handling of assigning contracts for constructing the lights. As the country moved westward, the Great Lakes obviously flourished with, I think the last number we heard was there were over 500 lighthouses just on the Great Lakes. So most times this was involved with the federal government. This was part of the federal government's role. The second part of the question with the mortar, these companies did use certain, building practices of that time, and there are stories, particularly in Wisconsin, where mortar was an issue. The mortar did need to be very strong, as you can imagine. Depending on the location of a lighthouse, the light may not necessarily have to be all that tall. The reason I'm saying that, the Pottawatomie Lighthouse on Rock Island, on northeast of Door County. The first lighthouse there, 1836, Wisconsin actually wasn't a state at the time, but the initial lighthouse there was not very tall, only about 30 feet tall, but it sits up on a bluff that's over 100 feet tall. The mortar actually in that particular building was faulty and doomed that lighthouse to a very quick lifespan, only 20 years later on. In 1858, a second lighthouse, the lighthouse that you see today on Rock Island, was built. So mortar was very important, and there are a few other stories, not just in Wisconsin, but on the Great Lakes, where tall brick towers with, if they had issues with faulty mortar, many times the tower would have to be reconstructed, or it would have to have been severe maintenance would have and done to it to keep it strong.
Is that oldest Wisconsin lighthouse on Rock Island, is that one still operating?
Pottawatomie Light still operates, but not the original. The one that Ken mentioned from 1836 had bad mortar, so they had to tear that down. But in its place is the one that stands today that is not only operating as a navigational beacon on a metal pole, but the original building has been totally refurbished. And it's actually open during the season, May through, I believe, mid-October. And it's staffed with volunteer docents that will allow you in and take you on a guided tour of the building and the grounds. It's highly recommended that you go there.
Let's take some calls. We have Tom in Burlington with us. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
I'm almost afraid to say this, but because a lot of people will be going there, between Racine, north of Racine and south of Milwaukee, there are two lighthouses, the one at Wind Point and then the one at North Point, and the cliffs are 80 to 100 feet high. The view is spectacular, and it's right here, just close to everybody. There's Oak Creek is right there. There's salmon fishing there, and the view is spectacular. I can't say how thrilling it is. You don't have to go all the way up to Door County to see some spectacular stuff. And I'm sure maybe your guests have probably seen what I'm talking about.
I bet you they have too. Kenner Barb?
Hey, Tom, that's so great. Yes, we've visited Wind Point many times, and we haven't mentioned her yet. She's the third tallest in the state at 108 feet, and they do open the tower the first Sunday or Saturday of the month during the summer, and you pay a small fee to climb. The view is spectacular. And that one, though, even though the tower may not be open on the day you visit, the grounds always are, and it's easily accessible. It's right off of a highway. You park. It's a beautiful park-like setting. You can walk around, take pictures of the lighthouse, and admire the beach, which, thankfully, is very nice and low. Now, if you go to North Point in Milwaukee, it is atop an 80-foot bluff, and it's quite a hike to get down to the lake from there. Again, the views from that tower are spectacular.
Thanks very much, Tom. Alex on Twitter says, if memory serves correct, I think there's a nice lighthouse up in Manitowoc. Is Alex correct, Ken or Barb?
Alex is absolutely correct, Joy. If you look at the map of Wisconsin, you can, even if you don't know where the lighthouses are, if you look at any major city in the state, be it Lake Superior, Lake Winnebago, the Bay of Green Bay, Door County, and then all the way down from the tip of Rock Island, all the way down the western coastline of Lake Michigan to the state line, any major city is going to have a lighthouse. Manitowoc certainly does. In its history, it had a number of early pier lights, wooden pier lights. The white, we call it, it looks like a white layer cake, a wedding cake in the Manitowoc Harbor. Currently, we believe, the last we heard, many lighthouses, as you may know, have changed hands in the last decade or two. Many times there's friends groups that are rehabilitating and restoring the lights, historical societies, and even private individuals. The lighthouse in Manitowoc, which is not open to the public at all, it had been several years ago that the Coast Guard did open up some of the lights in Algoma, Manitowoc, that area. But our understanding is the Manitowoc Lighthouse was actually bought by a private individual. The federal government has an auctioning process where they would prefer to the lights that are called excess, again, automated, no human presence at the lights. Those lighthouses, the federal government wants to get out of the lighthouse business. So they want entities, primarily groups, that are going to be able to refurbish them, many, many thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars or more are required to get a lot of these places back in shape. But through that process, generally they want a group, a friends group, sometimes a historical society group, and then if none of those bodies are able to take on the responsibility of the lighthouse and open it to the public, then it's auctioned off to the highest private bidder. And our understanding for Manitowoc was that a private individual now owns the light, has some, just kind of skeletal plans of what eventually they want to do to it. But stay tuned for Manitowoc. And there's a few others in that same situation. The Kenosha Pier Light, that's a red pier light in the Kenosha Harbor, has been sold to a private individual. And also here in our hometown, Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Breakwater Light, it's the white lighthouse out in the Milwaukee Harbor, has been sold to a nonprofit group here in the greater Milwaukee area.
All right, we'll talk, too, more about preserving lighthouses and the efforts going on there in our next half hour, but we also have Mike in Allenton with us now. Hi, Mike.
Yes, just a quick question. I know on the East Coast that each lighthouse has its own very distinct paint scheme, and I'm curious, do the ones on the Great Lakes also have a similar pattern, or, you know, is there any scheme to that? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay.
Hey, Mike, thanks. Great question. As far as paint schemes go, Wisconsin lighthouses seem to have red as a paint scheme, a lot of red towers, metal towers, a lot of red-roofed lighthouses. Some of them, though, have what's called a day mark. They may have an extra added feature such as Plum and Pilot where there's day marks that you could distinguish them out on the lake in the daylight hours. And Eagle Bluff and Chambers Island buildings are exactly the same, except the towers are set into the building at different angles, again, used as a day mark. And then at nighttime, mariners would use what's called the signature of each light. They would have a chart that would list the flashing capability of each light. They would know perhaps that Milwaukee flashed on for 2 seconds and off for 2 seconds, whereas the next lighthouse down the line, which would be Wind Point, would be a steady white light. So they would know in the daytime or in the nighttime what light they were looking at.
Well, we'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with Barb and Ken Wardius. They are lighthouse photographers and preservationists and co-authors of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. And we'll take more of your questions and your favorite lighthouses, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I saw the harbor lights. They only told me we were parting.
We'll continue our discussion about Wisconsin lighthouses in just a few moments as we are talking with the co-authors of the revised edition of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. 75 years ago, millions of radio listeners were shocked to hear alerts announcing the arrival of Martians. Writer Dean Robbins tells us the story behind one of history's greatest stunts.
For me, Halloween is associated with the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, which caused a national panic on October 30th, 1938.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
My family had the show on a Golden Age of Radio record album, and it spooked me as a kid. It's the story of a Martian invasion staged as if it were happening in real time, and a million listeners took the bait. A lot of them packed up their belongings and fled their homes. Others flocked to police stations, seeking refuge. Some people actually ran around with cloth pressed to their mouths so they wouldn't inhale the Martians' poison smoke. Who thought up this splendid stunt?
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
Orson Welles was a Wisconsin native, born in Kenosha and schooled in Madison. At 23, he'd already conquered New York theater. To this day, I love hearing the Wisconsin whiz kid make magic on War of the Worlds. His stroke of genius was to fabricate news bulletins, which interrupted what sounded like regularly scheduled programming.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program music to bring you a special bulletin, reports observing several explosions on the planet Mars.
Things turned grim during a bulletin from Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I on? Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden.
A reporter offers a chilling account of a Martian emerging from its spaceship.
Wait a minute. Something wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Eyes are black, with saliva dripping from its rimless lips.
Welles conducted his 10 actors and 27-piece orchestra from a podium in CBS's Manhattan studio.
Wait a minute, something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror that leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames.
During the reporter's frantic account, he signaled for silence and held it for 6 blood-curdling seconds.
Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Wilmer.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill.
Listeners got the idea that everybody had died from a Martian heat ray. Americans felt duped the next day when they realized the Earth had survived the hour-long broadcast by CBS's Mercury Theater on the air. The government launched an investigation, and Congress threatened to censor radio broadcasts. The Wisconsin State Journal's front-page headline was typical of newspapers around the world. Hysteria sweeps country as radio hoax describes invasion by Mars giants. Many people missed the second half of the broadcast, having fled their homes in terror. But those who stuck it out got to hear a final word from Wells himself.
The War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be. The Mercury Theater's own radio version of dressing up in a sheet and jumping out of a bush and saying boo.
It's the gentlest ending imaginable to a Martian invasion.
Boo. Dean Robbins is the editor of Madison's alternative weekly, Isthmus. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Every Friday at this time, we talk about something related to Wisconsin culture, and we celebrate life in Wisconsin. And I often ask you to tell me where to go for a great Wisconsin experience. And today we are shining a light on Wisconsin's lighthouses. Are you a lighthouse enthusiast? Why? Where's a good one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are happy to have with us our guests who are lighthouse photographers and preservationists. They are co-authors of the revised edition of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide, Ken and Barb Wardius. And Ken, this is a revised edition and updated. Why don't you tell us why this one's different than the original version that came out, what, more than a dozen years ago?
It sure did, Joy. Wisconsin Lighthouses, the first edition, was published in Madison, actually, Prairie Oak Press, in the year 2000. Since that time, much has changed at a lot of lighthouses in the state. We mentioned before about some of the restoration and preservation efforts, various groups that have taken over lighthouses. So it became clear to Barb and I, say 5 years ago, that there really was a need to do a revision. And the current revision that just came out last month, our current publisher is the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. I can't say enough good things about the folks there that took on this project with us. What we did was we changed almost every single photograph in the book. All of the color photography is done by Barb and I. There are over 150 photographs, dozens of archival photographs, both from the Wisconsin Historical Society and from private collections of folks that we know in our lighthouse travels. We also updated much of the history. We learned certain facts and things about various lighthouses that we did not know a decade ago. So we changed the photographs. We added archival images from the Wisconsin Historical Society's collections, postcards from their collections, a few maps. So it's really a conglomeration of all of that. And then the updated status of many of the lights that have changed hands over the last decade. But it's really a totally revised edition.
And you have, this isn't your first book on lighthouses, is it, Barb?
This is not our first book. As Ken mentioned, this one came out in the year 2000. But since that time, we've worked with Arcadia Publishing in working with their Images of America series. We've done a book strictly on Kana Island. We've done one on Wind Point and North Point in Milwaukee. And these are the black and white images that you see in the books. They're mainly historical archival photos that you need to obtain. And then, of course, write a story about each of those photos in the book. They're the ones that you see in many, many bookstores with the sepia-colored covers on them. They're very easy to spot. We've had a wonderful time doing this.
When I did my tour of the Door County Lighthouses last summer at Kana Island, the the person who was giving us the tour and took our photograph there said that that Kena Island was the most photographed lighthouse in the Midwest, or something along those lines. What makes Kena Island so special?
You know, that's a great way of describing Kena Island in a very short way. If you close your eyes and you dream of a lighthouse, chances are you're going to conjure up this idea of this tall white tower with the keeper's house right next to it. If you're at Kena Island and you open your eyes, that's a very similar image of what actually is at Kena Island. Kena Island's the tall, classic white tower. I forget the numbers of what the Door County Visitors Bureau has for visitors at Kena Island annually. It's thousands and thousands of people. It certainly could be the most photographed lighthouse in the Midwest. It's an iconic structure. If you go to Door County, if you go to other places in the Wisconsin area, it's really a tough lighthouse to beat. It's just that if you think of a lighthouse, Kena Island really fits.
Well, ask and we shall receive. Bruce Smith of Bailey's Harbor emails, I work 2 days a week as a docent at Kena Island Lighthouse in Bailey's Harbor. I use Barb and Ken's book on Kena Island regularly to help visitors appreciate the lighthouse. The Door County Maritime Museum is currently embarking on a $2.6 million project to preserve the facility and improve the grounds. We are very fortunate at Kena Island because of the thousands of visitors give us a source of income. So there's an effort to preserve the facility, Barb, at Kena Island?
Yes, they've been doing some wonderful renovations, and of course money is always a concern. The big project now that they finished recently was a parking lot. Since Kena Island is at the end of a dead-end road, many of the homeowners there were not the happiest, and I don't blame them with people parking on the roads and hoofing it over to Kena Island, but they've done that. They hope to erect a visitor center. They actually have some terrible but wonderful new bathroom facilities, and there's constant renovations needed on the buildings, of course, because of the elements taking their toll on the tower and the keeper's quarters.
Richard on Facebook writes, my brother Ken has worked on several lighthouse rehab projects, including Raspberry Island several years ago. He's currently involved with several other projects on the Apostle Islands of Lake Superior. Ken, can you talk some about the work that's going on to preserve the lighthouses on the Apostle Islands?
Sure. The Apostles is kind of a unique group of lighthouses, Joy. There's 10 lighthouses in the state of Wisconsin in that corner, that small little corner of Lake Superior. 8 of them are in an area called the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. That is a national park. There's 8 lighthouses, as I mentioned. There are more lighthouses in the Apostle Islands than any other national park in the entire country. The lighthouses in the Apostles, Raspberry Island is just gorgeous. It's one that has gotten a lot of renovation and funding over the years. Some of the other ones, not as much, but as the federal government's priorities and allocation of resources has changed over the years, it's been difficult for not only federal agencies, but these homegrown local historical societies and friends groups. If you can imagine what kind of resources are needed to rehab these lights, the amount of time and money is staggering. Raspberry Island and the Apostles has undergone renovation quite a bit over the last decade. Raspberry, if you get a chance to visit just one lighthouse in the Apostles group, Raspberry has the most visitors of any of them, but it is the most restored. Another one they're going to be working on is the Old Michigan Light, 1858, one of the older lighthouses still standing on the Great Lakes. But the federal government and the Apostle Islands folks, over the next decade or so, they've planned these various projects projects on towers, the roofs, the buildings, all of those areas need a lot of help. So there's a plan. Usually there's some sort of grand, a 10-year plan to update and rehab some of these lights. A lot of that's going on in the Apostles right now. But it takes time, and it takes limited resources that are available to stretch that out over years.
Ken and Barb Wardius are the co-authors of the revised edition of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. And we are talking with them about the lighthouses of Wisconsin and the efforts to preserve the lighthouses in Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your questions for them. We're welcoming your stories about lighthouses, maybe your own passion for lighthouses. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the past, the present, and the future of Wisconsin lighthouses this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with the co-authors of the revised edition of Wisconsin Lighthouses, a photographic and historical guide. And we welcome your questions and your thoughts about Wisconsin's lighthouses. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you enjoy touring or photographing lighthouses? Are you involved in preservation efforts? Tell us why and tell us where, and tell me where to go to see a great lighthouse. Let's take our next caller, Ken in Janesville. Hello, Ken.
Hello. Some time ago, I saw a movie that was set in the lighthouse that had Wisconsin references in it, and I was wondering if the guests know what lighthouse that was shot in. It was a classic movie.
It was a movie that was shot in one of Wisconsin's lighthouses.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know Ken or Barb?
We're looking at each other here at our kitchen table. We have no idea what lighthouse that would be, other than to tell the caller that there have been lots of movies about lighthouses or with lighthouses in them, as well as many, many books written, usually mystery-type books or murder-type books involving lighthouses, of course, and a storm and fog.
I've got a... The caller has my curiosity now, too, Joy. Barb and I are going to have to do some... Googling to see where that may have been. We think we know, and we always learn something about lighthouses, something new, but we're drawing a complete blank on this. Don't know of any instance so far that Wisconsin lighthouses have been used in an older movie, but we'll get looking it up.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to try to look it up too. Maybe we can have an answer by the end of the hour if something's on that magic interweb. Chuck in Boscobel is with us. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Good morning. Well, my favorite is an area I grew up in Superior, and it's the Eloise part of Superior, and that's the natural entrance through a freshwater spit that runs all the way from Wisconsin over to Duluth. Most people are familiar with Canal Park in Duluth, but fewer people are aware of the lighthouse on Wisconsin Point. And that is the only natural entrance to the Duluth Superior Harbor, which at one time was the second busiest port in the world, only in the United States, excuse me, only second to New York. So it's on a freshwater spit, which is also the longest in the world. And Duluth has dug theirs, and that's why Duluth basically has grown and Superior hasn't. But out on Wisconsin Point, it's great fishing. You got a wonderful view across the western end of Lake Superior to the ridge in Duluth. In fact, I think the lighthouse probably stands on rock that is mined over in Duluth, Duluth Gabbro. And I love the history of the area because Father Gene Alloway, the people up there call it Eloise, that section, that port section of Superior.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic place.
Well, what about that one, Ken or Barb?
We we can certainly echo a lot of what Chuck just said about Wisconsin Point, one of our favorites. In our book, too, one of our greatest photographs was taken at Wisconsin Point. There was a sunrise where the clouds in the horizon and the sun met for about 10 seconds only. We snapped a couple of images, one of our favorite photos that we've ever taken in all the years we've taken of lighthouses. Comes from Wisconsin Point. Chuck mentioned a couple of things very important. Duluth, Superior Harbor, very busy port, even today. But Wisconsin Point, the largest freshwater sandbar in the entire world, a great location for a lot of things. One thing listeners might not know, we learned this in our research of Wisconsin Point Light. By the way, the lighthouse dates to 1913. In November of 1975, the giant ore carrier Edmund Fitzgerald came from the harbor to the open lake, Lake Superior, in November. Little did the 29 men on board know that in less than 2 days, they would all have perished on the eastern end of Lake Superior. The Edmund Fitzgerald passed by Wisconsin Point. Wisconsin Point is automated. Its blinking lights flashes 24 hours a day. The men did not know that the lighthouse was actually saying goodbye to them. A very late winter, early winter, late fall storm. The ship broke in two just outside of Whitefish Point. But it passed by Wisconsin Point, unfortunately, on its last voyage.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and that anniversary of that, the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, is very, very close right now.
Yes.
Let's try to get one more call in Waukesha. David is with us. Hi, David.
Hi, question for you. Are there any inland lake lighthouses in Wisconsin?
Well, we talked a little bit about four on Lake Winnebago. Where are the four?
Okay, the four on Lake Winnebago. End of the lake is Fond du Lac. If you go up the lake a little bit, you come to Asylum Bay. You go a little bit farther north. I'm looking at my list here. Then we hit Kimberly Point Light, or Nina. It's actually a glorified rest stop in a beautiful park, and we highly recommend it. And then there's a private one outside of Oshkosh called the Rockwell Light. It's not easily seen. Many of the trees have overgrown, but the Rockwell Light is actually in someone's backyard. It's on a small private island, but you can find it with the directions in the book, and you can certainly take a peek at it without trespassing on anyone's private property. They're all wonderful. The one at Asylum Bay has a great footbridge that you can walk over to it. And the Fond du Lac Lighthouse you can actually climb seasonally. It's open for a self-guided tour.
Well, I've got lots of lighthouses on my list now, on my Tell Joy Where to Go list. So thank you both so much for being with us. A quick update. We Googled, and we did not find a movie made in a Wisconsin lighthouse. So must have been some other lighthouse.
we'll keep looking as well, though.
Yeah, and in our last 30 seconds, less than that, Ken, what do you hope readers take away from your book?
You know, the history, the photography, the need to preserve these lighthouses for future generations, just all of the folks that, you know, give of their time, at, you know, volunteers mm-hmm. and these historical societies and friends groups really are invaluable.
Thank you both so much for being with us. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Ideas Network.